From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Trump administration has apparently taken a great interest in California's crisis of housing and homelessness. The Washington Post this week broke the story of how a number of top-level federal government officials quietly toured Los Angeles' Skid Row. And according to the paper's headline, they want a, quote, crackdown on homeless camps in California, with aides discussing moving residents to government-backed facilities. Now, it is true that the issue of homelessness has dramatically worsened in California over the past few years. Housing costs continue to rise, and the number of Californians living in tents, RVs, or their cars has correspondingly risen. But advocates for the homeless are deeply skeptical of Trump's plans for regions like Skid Row and other urban centers around the nation, given that the president's administration has in fact cut federal funding for low-income housing. My guest is Diane Yentel, president and CEO of the National Low-Income Housing Coalition. Welcome to the program, Diane.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you make of the Washington Post article and what we know of this plan? It wasn't really an official statement that was put out. It was just unnamed officials talking to the paper, describing in vague terms what they want to see in places like Skid Row, Los Angeles.
Well, unfortunately, you're right. We don't know a lot other than the White House has taken a new interest in homelessness, and especially homelessness in California, LA, San Francisco, San Jose, and maybe along the West Coast. We know that this interest started, at least at the level of President Trump, after he had an interview with Tucker Carlson on Fox News. And since that time, Fox has run, I think it's 18 stories on homelessness, where previously they hadn't had any. And so his staff now are looking for what proposals he could put forward on homelessness. And the ones that we've heard that they're considering are very alarming. Everything from increased arrests of people experiencing homelessness, other forms of criminalization. We've heard about sweeps of homeless camps. We've heard about something about federal homeless camps, potentially taking over some federal property and turning it into homeless shelters that people may be required to go to or risk arrest. So we don't know the details yet. We have heard rumors of the possibility of an executive order that would put some of this potentially into motion, although there's a lot of questions about what kind of authority the federal government actually has over things that are happening at the local level.
So if we were to take the word of the paper that interviewed the aides, that's the Washington Post, in general outlines, they would want to destroy the encampments that people have created and place people in some sort of facilities, which sounds kind of scary and ominous. I mean, we're thinking of, for example, immigrants in detention facilities in the United States and the kind of terrible conditions that they face. And in fact, Mike Bonin, who is a city council member in Southern California, in Los Angeles, where we are based, even made a reference to that. He said, "We've buried refugee children held hostage in his damn facilities. What inhumane treatment will he sanction for the unhoused?" Does it sound to you like the government doesn't really have any plan yet, that they're flying by the seat of their pants? And in fact, it wasn't even the experts that toured Skid Row, at least the kind of experts that you would want to see?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. The people who were part of this White House delegation that went to LA, as far as I can tell, know little to nothing about homelessness and housing poverty and the solutions to them. They had a contingent from the Domestic Policy Council. The lead of it is Ben Hobbs, who before he was at the Domestic Policy Council, he was at HUD as a senior advisor. And before that, he was at, I believe, the Heritage Foundation. When he was at HUD, He was the person behind the administration's attempts to triple rents on the lowest income and most vulnerable people in subsidized housing, to raise rents for everybody else in subsidized housing, and to create work requirements. So this is the viewpoint that he's coming from as he leads this delegation into LA. The other people that were part of the delegation were from FEMA, from Department of Homeland Security. There were a couple of, I believe, recently appointed political staff from HUD. There were people from the Department of Justice and from the General Services Administration. As I said, I doubt strongly that any of these people have expertise in homelessness, ending homelessness, the solutions to it. And missing from the delegation were people with expertise, including the federal agency, the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness. They were not invited on the delegation, which I think tells us everything we need to know about whether or not this is actually about finding solutions or whether this is about politicizing a very real problem so that Trump and others in the administration can blame local officials and really not take any responsibility for the federal government's role in creating and exacerbating, in the case of Trump, the housing and homelessness crisis.
So the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness would have been the appropriate agency. What exactly is that? And is that the kind of federal government that would make a good partner for states like California?
Yeah, it's a federal agency that was created to lift up best practices and do research and share research and work with state and local governments and other federal agencies to lower and to end homelessness. And this is an agency that President Trump has tried for now 3 years in a row with each of his budgets to eliminate. And as you said earlier, you know, there's no way to take this administration at face value and think that this is a good faith effort. And that's based on their track record. You know, since this administration has been in office year after year after year, they have attempted to entirely eliminate programs that build or preserve homes for the lowest income people. They propose to literally take back rental assistance from 250,000 families who have it today and need it to keep a roof over their heads. They propose to evict 100,000 people, including 55,000 American kids who are in mixed status immigrant families, from subsidized housing. They've proposed to allow shelters to discriminate against transgender and other LGBT people who are experiencing homelessness. They've proposed allowing shelters to turn them away in their time of greatest need. So, you know, this administration has tried time and again to worsen, to exacerbate the homelessness and housing crisis. So if they were serious about trying to end it, they would start with protecting and expanding the programs that could do just that, but instead they've tried to eliminate or severely cut those programs.
Now, we may remember the online Twitter spat that President Trump had with House Representative Elijah Cummings about his home city of Baltimore in Maryland, where he made these accusations about the city being rat infested. And Los Angeles' Skid Row is just one of many areas that the president is looking at, including Baltimore. He seems to, of course, as he has done with so many other issues, be politicizing for his own personal political gain the issue of homelessness. If he can point out that Democratic state legislatures if he can make the case that Democratic state legislatures are creating homelessness problems or allowing homelessness to fester, this is for him a campaign issue. I mean, that's what it seems like he's trying to do.
It certainly does. It seems like, I mean, he's made multiple attempts to embarrass or punish people that he perceives as political enemies, particularly Democrats and Democrats in blue states. So I don't think it's an accident that these states all have the, or these areas all have that in common. They also have in common when it comes to Baltimore or Detroit or Chicago that they're predominantly African-American communities. Hmm. And when it comes to the homeless community in LA, there are shocking disproportionate impacts on people of color. When it comes to homelessness in the city of LA, there's about African-American households make up about 9% of the overall population, but they make up 40% of people experiencing homelessness. So when we're talking about the president and others really honing in on homelessness in LA, there's certainly a racial and potentially racist aspect to it.
So, Diane, we, of course, do need to admit that there is this huge homelessness crisis. Can all of it or even most of it be laid at the feet of the Trump administration? I mean, California has had problems with homelessness. Those problems have worsened. Some of the issues you were mentioning earlier with the increased discrimination in housing and the cutting of funding, is that what has led to the spike? Or are there other factors at work that the Democratic-controlled legislatures, or for that matter, any legislatures, really ought to be held responsible for?
Sure. Yeah. No, Trump certainly didn't create the housing or the homelessness crisis in our country. He's done nothing to help it, and he's attempted to worsen it. But strangely, when he had that interview with Tucker Carlson, he said that this is a problem that started 2 years ago with his administration, which is a bizarre thing to say in the first place and not at all true. So homelessness and housing.
So he was actually trying to own up to, he was actually trying to take the blame for the problem.
It's very strange, but it's not true at all. And homelessness has been around for several decades, and the housing crisis as well. It's been growing over that time, and there's a lot of blame to go around, to be honest. You know, today we have a shortage of 7 million homes that are affordable and available to the lowest income people, which is why we have so many people who are paying so much of their income, their very limited income, towards rent. It's why we have so many people who are homeless. If we went back to the late 1970s, we'd find a time in our country where we actually had a surplus of homes affordable to those lowest income people. And the kind of homelessness that exists today didn't exist back then. We didn't have hundreds of thousands of people sleeping in shelters on the streets. We didn't even have the infrastructure of a shelter system because we hadn't needed it to such an extent back then. The biggest difference between then and now is federal funding for programs that make homes affordable to lowest income people. So if we took 1970s dollars and we put them into today's, we'd see that back then we spent three times, or we had the authority to spend three times as much on programs that keep the lowest income people housed. So the Ronald Reagan administration came in and really slashed HUD's budget in half, and we've never recovered. There's been other programs that have been funded and developed, even new housing programs, but until recently, none of them have been as deeply targeted or as fully funded since then. Congress has, administrations have historically now for decades been underfunding the programs that are proven to end homelessness and housing poverty. So that's, when we look at the needs for the lowest income renters, that's the greatest challenge, is lack of funding for solutions. Now, in California, there's another challenge that's sort of layered on top of that, which is local zoning restrictions that prevent the development of any kind of apartment in many communities, much less affordable apartments. And so, I mean, the city of Berkeley, it's practically illegal to build an apartment. Hmm. And so when supply is so constricted, but demand keeps going up, prices go up. And so rents have really skyrocketed. And that is a challenge for local governments to really, I mean, especially California's sort of an example of how bad it can get when communities can't build any kind of multifamily housing in their communities. So local communities, city councils have to grapple with the need to remove those restrictive zoning. It's a huge challenge, and it's a challenge too. It comes back in many cases to race and to sort of othering. There are a lot of communities who, in these very progressive towns, say all the right things, but when it comes to the possibility of building a shelter or an affordable apartment building in their community, they fight it tooth and nail, and they show up at the city council meetings and they oppose it. And it's very difficult to build these kind of things in many of these cities that have increasing homelessness. This is a piece of the puzzle that has to be resolved.
Right, the NIMBYism factor, not my backyard. California did pass a law a couple of years ago making it easier for people to build extra units in their back houses, so-called ADUs, that would help increase the availability of affordable housing. But at the same time as this White House tour of Skid Row took place, I want to go back to that. A week before that story broke of White House officials touring LA Skid Row, we heard from the Trump administration about their housing financing plan. And this plan to privatize Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that analysts say will actually end up making mortgages more expensive. This is, of course, for home buyers rather than renters, and especially for Black borrowers who have, of course, historically faced loan discrimination and housing loan discrimination. So even on in terms of the housing market, when it comes to homeowners, the Trump administration is trying to make things worse.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting that this is at a time when Black homeownership levels are lower than they've been ever, lower than they were when discrimination was illegal. So there's an incredible challenge there that requires kind of new ideas, new ways to really move the conversation forward, new ways to ensure that access to credit is available to low-income people, to historically marginalized people, including people of color, first-time homebuyers. And several of the proposals that are included in the White House housing finance reform proposal would, as you said, actually make it more difficult for low-income people and people of color to get that access to that credit that they need to become homeowners. Mm-hmm. If I could, Sonali, too, yeah. I just wanted to say one more thing about the homeless dynamic in California and in LA. I think another thing that's important for people to understand, of course, is that homelessness exists, unfortunately, throughout the country. It is a crisis, and it exists in cities and suburbs, in urban area, in rural areas, and actually, LA. The number of people experiencing homelessness in LA is shockingly high, and it's going up. The number of people experiencing homelessness in New York City is actually higher than it is in LA, but most people wouldn't know that because 95% of people experiencing homelessness in New York City are in shelters. In LA, it's about 75% of homeless people are unsheltered. So there are not enough shelter beds for them. So they have no choice but to sleep on the street, in their cars, in RVs. And because of that, it's much more visible to the average person. And so it's, I think, the urgency that's felt locally to come to solutions there is felt even more because it's so visible.
And then actually, just a month ago, Los Angeles, the city of Los Angeles, restricted the ability of people to live in their cars, to sleep in their cars. Didn't address where those people were going to live, just said they couldn't do it anymore. So you have, again, you know, officials, city officials, not really addressing the actual problem. Now, of course, even shelters aren't permanent solutions, right? They're temporary solutions.
Yeah, actually, in the city of LA, what they did was they created a new program. It's relatively new. I guess it's a couple of years old now. That's called Safe Parking. And they, you're right, people are, because homelessness is growing and so many people are sleeping in cars or RVs, and they were sleeping on streets in communities that weren't equipped to handle that. The city passed a law that you can't do that anymore. And then they had some local businesses open up their parking lots at night and allow people to come in and sleep in those parking lots. And then they have porta potties and some security so people can feel a little bit of a semblance of security to try to get a night's rest. It's just another shocking example of what we all are allowing in this incredibly wealthy country of ours, because it is a choice, right? We choose to allow homelessness and housing poverty to exist. We certainly have the solutions. We have proven solutions to ending homelessness and housing poverty. We have the resources as a country, but we don't have the political will to actually fund those resources, those solutions at the scale necessary.
And of course, the broader context to all of this is the state of the economy. We're being told over and over again that the economy is booming. The economy is booming. Joblessness is low. The Census Bureau released a report showing the poverty rate had dropped. Well, if that's the case, why is there this crisis of homelessness?
Right. It's working really well. The economy is working really well for wealthy people, and they're getting wealthier. For low-wage workers, not so much. And in fact, the jobs that our economy are creating are predominantly low-wage. The Department of Labor projects jobs that are likely to have the greatest growth over the next 10 years. And of those jobs that the Department of Labor projects are going to grow the most over the next 10 years, 7 out of 10 of them pay less than what it costs to rent just a modest one-bedroom apartment.
Wow.
So the economy is not working for the lowest income people. Many of them, their wages have been stagnant, and for some cases, they're really falling in real terms. And the new jobs that our economy are creating aren't reason for hope that it's going to get much better on the income side.
Well, Diane, where can people find out more about the work that you do with the National Low Income Housing Coalition?
They can go to our website, which is nlihc.org. So that stands for National Low Income Housing Coalition.org. And they can find our research. They can sign up to get newsletters and calls to action when we need people to be urging their members of Congress to do more. And much more information on our website is available there.
That's nlihc.org. Thank you so much, Diane, for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
My guest has been Diane Yentel, President and CEO of the National Low Income Housing Coalition. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWithSonali.